Thank you. Thank you, Keith, and thanks to everyone for putting together this session. I will be talking about the policy arena and the role of agriculture in greenhouse gas mitigation and increasingly in sustainable agriculture and really delivering solutions to society in terms of ecosystem service benefits. My organization, SEAG, as Keith pointed out, we're a multi-stakeholder coalition. We work across the entire agricultural and food and beverage value chain. And we were formed in 2009 really to bring agreement to this whole area of agricultural offsets. What do they offer? How can we help to bridge the data gaps that exist? How can we bring the agricultural sector, farmers, ranchers, landowners, to the table to participate in this? Really, what are the opportunities? What are the solutions? When we started, we were focused on a pending legislation for cap and trade within the Senate and the House in the United States, and the opportunity for agricultural offsets. That legislation never passed, so we've been working since then, really broadening our focus to ecosystem services, other environmental benefits that can be delivered by the agricultural sector. What I want to do is I want to talk about, if you will, the history of where we came from, because I think it's very important, and then talk about where I see us going, what the trends are. So I'll talk about the historical context, and then I'll delve a little bit into what SEAG and all of our stakeholders are doing in terms of agricultural sector services and solutions, and then really talk a little bit about the status of the metrics and methodologies. Measuring this, accounting is in fact very important. It does have to be transparent. We've done a lot of work with a lot of stakeholders in this space, and I want to go through that. And then finally talk about what are the remaining barriers to really implement these services and solutions at scale, and what are the highest priority needs for success. This is really just a context-setting slide, and I'll walk you through contextually how I've set this up. So a lot of the work that has been underway in the United States started with the Framework Convention process. In the Kyoto Protocol, there was an obligation, actually, by all countries to begin thinking about how we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And there was, in fact, a role there for agriculture, so I'll talk about it. But that was the impetus within which the United States started a lot of the activity. So I'll talk about what the White House has done, what the Congress has done. USDA, in particular, in this space has been very important. And then really, what has been the role of markets? John did a great job of going through where we are with the markets. And I include in the market sustainable supply chain initiatives because they do, in fact, have a market pull and push, which is very significant. And then I'll conclude back with the Paris Agreement because I think it's kind of come full cycle and we're back to focusing a lot on terrestrial land use in terms of mitigation opportunities, but not just for greenhouse gas emissions. So this is just a slight history. In Kyoto in 1997, terrestrial sinks and the role of agriculture was a huge issue for the U.S. negotiators. I was actually in the Senate at the time, and I was part of the congressional delegation that was participating in these negotiations. And I can tell you there were many members of the Senate in particular who were very focused on what role can agriculture play. Soil carbon at this time was a very important focal point that was bringing together a lot of the players. And so it was important then. It was always very controversial, however. In The Hague in 2000, I was actually at the White House at this time working on the very same issues. The issue of sinks actually brought down the negotiations. The EU in particular has always been very suspicious about what the United States in particular was trying to get with sinks, but our ability to measure this. So it's been very contentious. I didn't include it here, but in 2009, within the Framework Convention, was the very first workshop held in Bonn at the Intersessionals on agriculture. And it looked not just at soil carbon sinks for agriculture, but the entire role of agriculture in terms of emissions and mitigation opportunities. So the focus has, in fact, broadened, and as has been pointed out, within Paris, we have a whole new set of obligations and a way to address them, and there's some pretty significant opportunities there for terrestrial mitigation opportunities. I think they're very important for markets and for trading mechanisms, which is where our organization has been focusing. So in terms of what has been happening in the United States, I should point out much of what has happened has been in the absence of compliance markets, with a few exceptions that John pointed out. I think California is most notable. There is also one exception. In 2008, in the Farm Bill, there was a provision included, Section 2709, that required the Secretary of Agriculture to begin to prepare the agricultural sector to participate in environmental markets. So look at what the opportunities are and help prepare the sector. And there was a provision saying specifically look first at carbon markets. So USDA has been doing that, and that's the only mandate that they've had. Again, I referenced briefly the Waxman-Markey bill, which made it through the House, did have provisions in there for agriculture. The agricultural sector was heavily engaged in helping to negotiate that. It did not pass the Senate. So again, we're not operating under any national mandate. What NRCS did, though, with the 2000 Farm Bill provisions, they've been doing a lot of work, and it has resulted in over $10 million in funding from USDA and NRCS in the form of conservation innovation grants that have created actual methodologies, working with the agricultural sector, with project developers. CIEG has been working with these SIGs to really develop protocols, develop methodologies, create carbon credits, and sell them or trade them in voluntary and compliance carbon markets. They had the first round of SIGs in 2011 and an entire another round in 2015, and as Adam put up, there was another round that was just announced that will be awarded next year. And then what the White House has been doing here is mostly capacity building within the federal agencies. There were two executive orders that required federal agencies to reduce their environmental footprints, including their greenhouse gas footprints. The first one in 2009 allowed agencies to purchase renewable energy credits if they could not meet their obligations and emission reductions. This one in 2015 has set up a mechanism where potentially offsets, carbon offsets, can be purchased by agencies that cannot meet their obligations. And USDA and the Department of Interior are actually leading those discussions across all federal agencies. So if, in fact, the government could become a source of demand in the marketplace, it would help with the prices, it would help with the obstacles that John pointed out. And then the last one, the U.S. or Council on Environmental Quality at White House issued guidance to environment or all federal agencies on how to account for greenhouse gases in any activity that has an environmental impact. So the National Environmental Policy Act requires agencies to do that, look at the impact of their activities on the ground. And this guidance in 2016 actually provided agencies with accounting tools so that they can begin to do this. So again, it's been federal capacity building for the most part. And then I won't talk a lot about this. I think it's been well covered, but I think we are seeing new opportunities within the Paris Agreement. There's specific language about conserving and enhancing forests and biological carbon reservoirs. The important thing I want to point out here is that it does, in fact, encourage policies on the role of non-carbon benefits, so social and economic indicators, as well as other environmental benefits, such as ecosystem services, are now encouraged, and a lot of countries are looking at their ability to build on these policies. And, of course, there can be trading through companies or countries. As John pointed out, the accounting is going to be the most difficult issue there. So in terms of trends, what we've been doing here in the United States on land-based mitigation opportunities, our approach, because it did develop from the Kyoto Protocol, which is really looking at point sources of emissions, has been a point source approach, if you will. It's been a bit disjointed, I would say, but we have learned a lot from it. We've been focusing on one gas, one practice. All of the methodologies that are in the marketplace are not looking at the landscape, but they're looking at one activity and the results of that. Within agriculture, you know, these are a couple of examples. I think what we're seeing now that is starting to happen in the landscape, emerging policies are looking to account for both carbon benefits and other ecosystem service benefits across the landscape. Agriculture is, of course, a system. It's a management system. It's not just any one practice at any one time. And emerging policies are starting to take this into account and look at how we can both measure and account for these activities. Jurisdictional approaches are really aligning accounting boundaries, because both Stephen and John pointed out the accounting boundaries are very important. And governments can have an influence over how we establish baselines and business as usual scenarios, and that will be important. By shifting to this sort of approach, more of a programmatic approach, you take away some of the issues we've had in the marketplace in terms of accounting, so that individual projects and landowners don't have to be responsible for accounting, but the government or the program can be. And again, you can show aggregated impacts and outcomes across the landscape. And if a government or another jurisdiction is actually creating these programmatic approaches, they can align the incentives and then the metrics, if you will, and performance, so that we're moving in the right direction at the right time. And then lastly, as I pointed out, you can look at not just carbon benefits, you can look at water quality benefits, you can look at biodiversity, wildlife habitat benefits, other important benefits that society has indicated are very important that the agricultural sector can help with. And you can do this at different scales within this sort of framework, from the federal scale with the greenhouse gas inventory all the way down to county and state scales. This approach is currently being developed in, of course, of all places, California, in both Sonoma and Merced counties. So then the next thing I wanted to talk about is, again, this ecosystem, or the spectrum of ecosystem service programs. This is something we've been giving a lot of thought to in CEAG, because we're really trying to build out these opportunities for the agricultural sector. And what we've been doing is we've created a metrics, and we're really analyzing what are the opportunities and the obstacles by opportunity, by program, if you will. What are the data requirements for compliance in these various approaches and programs? What's the acceptable level of uncertainty when you're quantifying the outcomes? And it does vary according to the policies or the approaches. What level of verification is required? What's the current level of opportunity for the agricultural sector, for landowners? And then looking at the status of metrics and methods and the highest priority needs for success. This is starting to build out that matrix, and I'll just draw your attention up here. These are the programs we're talking about. So we're starting on the left with conservation programs, which are voluntary programs through the Farm Bill. USDA pays farmers to adopt certain practices that have environmental impacts that are listed here. Next, I have sustainable supply chain programs, which again do have a lot of push and pull in the marketplace and are developing metrics to try to measure and monetize that. And then voluntary and mandatory carbon markets and markets that pay for ecosystem services. This is another layer of the matrix, if you will. And we have both qualitative and quantitative assessments as part of this. But what I want to really talk about here is what we're trying to do is ensure that by aligning these programs, by aligning the metrics and methodologies, by documenting what's required for all of these, we can create one continuum to engage landowners. And if they're currently participating in conservation programs, they can understand what they have to do to participate here or to participate in the marketplace. What additional burden do they take on, and what's the potential return on investment for them? So we're trying to really build this out. Right now, what we're working on is the highest priority needs for success. So I'll talk a little bit about that. This is part of the matrix that we're developing. And this really is, what are the maturity of metrics and methodologies that have been developed, and where do we see the most opportunities? So there's a lot of opportunity in conservation programs, but of course, there's not a lot of funds associated with this, if you will. Sustainable supply chains, I think there's still a lot of work to be done with metrics and methods for development, but I think there's a lot of opportunity. There has been, again, a lot of work in compliance markets, but there's not a lot of opportunity. A lot of this is associated with the costs and the rigor that's required to participate. So the highest priority issues to address, John, I think, went through a lot of this, but we really need to get a better handle on what level of rigor is associated with each of these different programs and how to bring down the cost effectiveness. And I think we can continue to look to technology and some of these programmatic approaches, these accounting approaches that I was referencing, to help bring down the cost. The status of program and market development is another high priority issue. And again, we need to really harmonize and align these approaches, the metrics and methodology, so that that continuum is using the same metrics. We're really building on these opportunities for the sector. And then one thing that really needs a lot of work is valuing ecosystem services. We need to better quantify the multiple environmental benefits from some of these solutions, and be able to monetize them in ecosystem service markets. In terms of requirements for achieving success, one of the things that's really still missing is the decision support systems that the sector requires on the ground. How can they engage? What is the potential benefit to them? What is it they need to do? What's the return on investment? Farmers or businessmen? They really want to know, if I do this, what do I have to do? How much can I possibly make? And in what time frame? We need to better pull together those support systems. Appropriate levels of financial and technical support, at least until the markets are more fully developed. There's still a lot of requirements for financial support, particularly when a producer undertakes a risk that might have an impact or hit on yield, for instance. If you're changing a practice, you are undertaking risk. So if we can come up with instruments to help cover some of that impact, that would really improve farmers' ability to participate. And then, of course, we really need a stronger price signal. And as John pointed out, the price signal is better in compliance markets, but hopefully over time, the price signal will continue to go up in these voluntary markets as well. And what are the benefits of bringing this to scale? I think it's clear if we can provide income generation opportunities for farmers, ranchers, landowners, that's always an improvement. But we really can better protect, preserve, and restore vital ecosystem services from the land, from that are associated with agricultural opportunities. And this really all does come down to sustainable agriculture and food security issues that we're facing that have been pointed out. So thank you.
Okay, I think we've got time for a couple questions, and we're going to have a short break of about 10 minutes, and after which we'll have the five-minute lightning round. So any questions for Debbie?
Phil. Yeah, I think there's a couple of ways to think about this. One of the things we have been grappling with is, because we know there are other environmental benefits associated with a lot of the activities for greenhouse gas mitigation, if we can capture that, it makes the credit, if you will, the activity, more valuable to potential buyers. Right, so whether you're looking at the government as a potential buyer or a company, if you can capture that, even if you're not monetizing it, there's additional value there. That's one thing. For ecosystem service markets, right now we're really talking about water quality markets. There are some compliance markets. There are some markets that I think are threatening to become compliance markets, if you will, particularly for water quality. So we really do need to be able to measure what is happening there. And if, in fact, you're going to sell it into a water quality system, if you will, folks like the EFRI are looking at, can you stack credits from water quality benefits with other benefits and sell them in a marketplace? I think that's been very hard, but what we're hoping to do is to continue to test that. And even if you can't get a different price or maybe even just a slightly higher payment price, I think over time, as we continue to look at how we account for it, how we measure it, I think over time we can probably create better signals. Whether or not the farmers actually require a financial incentive to do that, I think it remains to be seen. We're finding it very hard to engage farmers in a lot of these projects unless there is, in fact, a financial incentive. So we're really trying to build it out. I think it's multiple issues, both sociocultural issues, but also market issues that really need to be addressed. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it from the standpoint of a purchaser, you know, especially when you think about the market base and buying effectively, you know, green credits for a consumer.
Right.
Okay, thanks everyone.